part, but let's stay on the economy here, Julie. All things consumer, all things inflation. Let's bring in Seth Carpenter. He's Morgan Stanley's chief economist here. Seth, always nice to get some time with you. So a below expectations read on consumer sentiment. Do you think the inflation, these high levels of inflation we are seeing, is starting to really hit households and how they think about consuming goods?
I think inflation has to be a concern for a lot of households, especially the households at sort of the middle and lower end of the income distribution. On top of inflation, we also know that the child tax credit ended at the beginning of the year. And so I think all of that really is a drag, at least in the short term, on the consumer mindset, consumer spending. So an air pocket seems very plausible. I think, though, in the more medium term, the job market is solid. I thought Julie's point was valid. The unemployment rate is measured as quite low. We saw from the last jobs report that there were a lot of new jobs. We got upward revisions to previous months. And so usually what the data tell us is that as long as those job gains continue, we tend to get consumer spending holding up. So I think the consumer sentiment numbers, they're definitely a cautionary tale. They're definitely a bit of a yellow light flashing, but the fundamentals still look pretty good.
Where are you guys at, Seth, in terms of interest rate increases, the number this year, whether we're going to get 50 basis points at the March meeting? What's the Morgan Stanley estimate here?
Absolutely. So Ellen Zentner is our chief U.S. economist and her team. They do great work. Right now, the baseline view is 4 rate hikes with some front loading and the balance sheet coming off. But I think we all would agree if there are risks to that. Right now, it looks like the risks are to more hikes rather than fewer. So I think that's key. The 50 basis point in March is clearly a big narrative right now in the markets. My baseline now is that it's not going to happen. I see the arguments for it. When I talk to clients and they say, which hiking cycle is the best one to compare, I point to the 1990s, so where we did see some outsized increases. That said, we've had a bit of mixed communication. We definitely had a number of FOMC participants walking back on the idea of 50 to start things off with. So I think for now, I'm inclined to think 25 is the most likely outcome. They probably wait until the meeting itself to start that rate hiking cycle so they can have it in the context of forecasts, have it in the context of a press conference. But the world is moving quickly, and they clearly are have a strong desire to get moving soon with raising interest rates.
So, Seth, what I keep trying to figure out here is you see the inflation hit to consumer confidence, people clearly worried about prices, the Fed going to react to that in one way or another. But what effect is that going to have on inflation and when? Because we are still looking at supply issues that are a problem, right?
Absolutely. So I think there are a few aspects here. First, we've constructed, following some of the research out of the New York Fed, a global index on supply chain issues, supply chain conditions. And it does look, in level terms, they're still a problem. But in change terms, they are getting better. And I think that's important. And that fact is part of our forecast that over coming months,
oh, I think Seth is frozen there, Brian Stasi, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, Seth, are you back with us?
I think so. Hold on for 1 second. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, so apologies for that.
That's okay.
I think supply chains should be getting better over time, and in several months' time, we could see that showing up in better goods prices. So that for us is a key part of the forecast. But what can the Fed do? What is all this meaning? I think the main part is to try to slow aggregate demand across the economy so that the actual available supply in the economy is better aligned with what's going on. Usually most empirical estimates say that takes a few quarters to hit the real economy and then a few quarters after that to actually hit inflation. So I don't think policy this year is going to have a material effect on U.S. inflation in 2022. That's going to be much more of a 2023 phenomenon.
Seth, help us understand this new narrative in the market that we might see an emergency Fed rate increase before that March meeting. In your view, what message would something like that send to the markets?
I think that is a very, very difficult communication situation for the Fed to be in. They clearly want to communicate to markets, to the public, to the Congress that they care about inflation. They're on the way to do something about inflation and that they're not asleep at the switch. On the other hand, doing an emergency move outside of a scheduled meeting, especially on the heels of an extra inflation print, could send a signal that all of a sudden they've become panicked. So I think it's a very delicate communication issue for the Fed. My baseline view is that they would wait until the meeting so they could have that whole communication context to deliver things on. But I think it is, you know, there are clearly members of the committee who are enthusiastic about getting going with rate hikes. I just don't think that's where the committee is going to end up.
You look globally, of course, not just at the United States, and we are seeing the ECB sort of inch towards tightening, right? Then you've got the BOE there in the mix as well, sort of in between the US and Europe, I suppose. What is all of this going to mean for global growth when all is said and done? I mean, that's not even to speak of, obviously, there are a lot of other parts of the world, including China as well.
Exactly. And it's great you bring in China because they are in many ways the counterpoint to the large central banks of the world starting on the tightening cycle. So absolutely, the ECB, we've recently refreshed our call for the ECB. Jens Eisenschmidt is the chief Europe economist for Morgan Stanley. We see them ending that asset purchase program early by September, and then as early as December, starting to raise rates in fairly quick order, getting to at least zero, so eliminating the negative deposit rate. So the shift across the developed market central banks is now sort of more or less complete with the ECB on board. I think, though, in very strong contrast is the PBOC. So China slowed aggressively last year. Then there was a signal that they were changing policy, not just monetary policy, also fiscal policy, credit policy, some of the environmental policies that were put in place. And we've seen that reversal already start to show through in China. So the PBOC is actually in an easing stance. The rest of policy out of Beijing is in an easing stance. So there really is this interesting divergence going on between the large DM central banks and the other very, very large economy in the world, which is China.
Seth, with all this talk of global coordination on rate hikes, just a cool inflation, what is your probability on a recession in the next 24 months?
So I think in the next 24 months, I feel reasonably constructive, pretty sanguine about a recession. There's always a chance things go wrong, but I don't think the next 24 months is the time to look for it. We still have some catching up to do, especially in Europe, coming out of COVID. So there's some underlying strength there. For the US, like I pointed out, the labor market is still strong. You know, back to Europe, the recovery fund has not yet been deployed and will add some support. So I feel in the near term, better and better about it. As central banks start to tighten policy, they have what is the canonical problem of monetary policy, which is how do we tighten policy, slow the economy, cool down inflation without going so far that we tip over into recession. I don't think any central bank is at this point intending to cause a recession, and that's going to be the challenge. Now, in terms of timing, again, why I feel good about the next year for sure and probably the next 24 months is that it takes time for that policy tightening to feed through to the real side of the economy. And so I feel like with those lags, the next 12 months for sure, the next 24 months, pretty good about where things are. Once we get into the 2024 range, I think there you have to be super careful. How able are central banks, with all of the best intention, how able are they to calibrate that policy tightening to ease up on the tightening when it's needed?
Seth, finally, I just want to switch gears here for a moment, and I want to talk about who might be setting policy going into the next few years. Lisa Cook is one of the nominees for the Federal Reserve Board right now. She would be the first Black woman to serve on the board, and she's come under criticism, particularly from Republicans, because her research is very focused on the role of race in the economy. As a Black economist, as someone who has served in government, I'm just curious how you're watching that situation and what you make of it.
I'm watching it with great interest. I'll say just at a very high level, the Fed, the policymakers, I think, are well served by having a diverse set of views on lots of different ways to conduct policy. The narrative at the time that Chair Powell was first being nominated to be chair, one of the market narratives was, is this a good idea because he's not a quote unquote real economist? I actually think he has demonstrated that he is extremely smart, has a great grasp of both markets and the economy, and not being a trained PhD economist with his own research is probably liberating to allow him to take the best of all worlds without being constrained. So now to other nominees. I mean, there's Phil Jefferson, who has a long history of working on monetary policy. So I think that's a natural fit. Sarah Raskin spent time at the Fed, time at the Treasury, not an economist by training, but has a clear view into how policy should work. And so I think Lisa Cook's research as an economist into how different parts of the economy, especially for Black Americans, I think is a very, not necessarily her specifically, but I think having that broad range of views is a very healthy place to be. I personally have academic research published in academic journals way back from the beginning of the 2000s on the differential effect of monetary policy on unemployment rates across racial groups. I don't think that makes anyone a lesser macroeconomist. I think it forces you to ask questions. Are we being too simple with our models? And if so, where are the degrees of complication? So I think a diverse set of views is a great benefit to a policymaking institution.
Indeed it is. Always appreciate your insights. Seth Carpenter, Morgan Stanley Chief Economist. Have a great weekend.